This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The governments of Canada and the United States have mutually agreed to restrict all non-essential travel across its border as both countries try to slow the spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau held a news conference early Wednesday morning explaining that supply lines of trade goods remain open. However, persons who are simply traveling will no longer be able to cross the U.S.-Canadian border for tourism and recreational purposes. In yesterday's press conference, Prime Minister Trudeau said that specific rules on travel restrictions between Canada and the U.S. are in flux and continue to evolve.
We talked about exactly that this morning, President Trump and I. We are looking at all options. We're not taking any options off the table to ensure that indeed our economies and our people that are so interconnected in so many different ways to ensure the smooth flow of goods and essential materials and medication across the border. These measures will last in place as long as we feel that they need to last. We will again closely coordinate on that as well.
When asked if he's considering implementing the Emergency Measures Act, which would restrict travel within Canada, Trudeau responded, not yet, but the government is looking at all options.
We will continue to look at measures as they become necessary. I will highlight, of course, that the Emergency Measures Act is a significant step, not one that we feel we need today, but not one that we are closing the door to in the future if necessary.
And again, that was Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He made the announcement of the U.S.-Canadian border travel restrictions from his official residence, where he is in self-isolation. Trudeau's wife, Sophie, was confirmed positive for COVID-19 late last week. In other ag news from around the world, Bayer Ag has agreed on draft settlement terms with half a dozen law firms representing tens of thousands of plaintiffs, alleging that its Roundup weed killer causes cancer, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday. Shares of the German drugs and pesticides company have come under immense pressure since it lost the first U.S. lawsuit claiming that glyphosate-based Roundup, acquired via its takeover of Monsanto in 2018, causes cancer. Last month, the company said it was in no rush to reach terms with plaintiffs' lawyers and was less inclined to set aside funds for any deal following recent U.S. decisions in its favor. Bayer had also said that based on average analyst predictions of a settlement worth about $10 billion, the company would not have to write down the value of the $63 billion Monsanto acquisition. The settlement still appears poised to end up around $10 billion, which the Wall Street Journal reported, citing a person that was familiar with the matter. The report also added that a formal deal has not been signed and could yet fall apart. In news back here in the States, a group of farm state senators seeks additional assistance from federal agencies for rural areas to cope with COVID-19. 24 senators penned a letter to the Department of Interior and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, along with the Department of Homeland Security earlier this week. The letter requests, quote, immediate assistance in mobilizing agencies to offer coordinated support for rural counties, municipalities, and tribal communities as they respond to the coronavirus. The lawmakers say rural communities are working to set up local emergency operations centers to help manage their response, but face challenges with limited staff capacity. The letter states, quote, some communities are already overwhelmed with the challenge. Throughout rural America, the Department of the Interior and the Department of Agriculture employ thousands of federal civil servants who have the relevant experience to assist with emergency response. With this expertise available, the lawmakers say, quote, it is crucial that the Federal Emergency Management Agency provide the authorities necessary and work with both agencies to deliver effective, coordinated assistance to rural communities. And that's especially true here in our mid-Illinois area. Fears of a recession and sharply lower markets are causing some to compare the 2020 coronavirus outbreak to the 2008 financial crisis. However, Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist for Intel FC Stone, says there's one glaring difference between 2008 and 2020.
The one big difference from 2008 is we were in the middle, actually kind of on the front end, of a big commodity boom back in 2008. And that the type of commodity boom that comes only once every 30 to 35 years. The previous one was in the mid to late 70s. And so That was a real positive. But once the economic problems started, commodities started falling and fell hard because they were so high. This time, the commodity prices were already suppressed, and so they have not fallen as much as the equities, which were probably overpriced at the time.
Suderman says that means don't expect a large bounce in commodity markets because of the current low prices, but offers this advice.
So since they haven't fallen as far, they probably aren't going to bounce as much, but some of them still do have the opportunity to bounce. When did they bounce in the 2008-2009 collapse? Well, it was when the VIX started falling back below 35. What's the VIX? VIX is the volatility index that is traded at the Chicago Board of Options Exchange and CBOE, and it is based on S&P 500 stock index put option premiums. And so the higher the fear index, the higher the fear on Wall Street, the larger those put option premiums and the higher the VIX. And I found in studying the VIX over the years, it tends to trade between 10 and 20 normally, that anytime it trades above 30, it's difficult for any asset to sustain a rally unless it's a safe haven asset, unless it has a strong story.
He also outlines how commodities recovered in 2008.
And what we saw in the 2008-2009 is as we started to move past the financial crisis, the VIX, which hit an all-time record high that year of 89.5 in October 2008, the commodities didn't start recovering until the next winter, almost March, when the VIX fell back below 13 and then below, 35 and then below 30. Once that happened, then we resumed the commodity boom that we had started in 2008. So that's what I'm watching now is when does the VIX start to fall again? It's currently trading around 77, highest it's been since October 2008. When it starts falling below about 35, then I think the commodities will be in a better position to start sustaining a rally and recovering from this and trading the fundamentals.
Again, that was Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist for Intel FC Stone. The American Farm Bureau has released its first assessment of the impact on farmers and ranchers in the wake of the national mitigation efforts to combat COVID-19. In a letter to the Agriculture Secretary, Sonny Perdue, AFBF President Zippy Duval pledged, quote, America's farmers and ranchers will be with you in every step of the way. The letter, which will be updated as new issues materialize, outlines concerns from Farm Bureau members across the country. Those concerns include H-2A labor issues, with the State Department's announcement to suspend all processing of new non-emergency visa applications in Mexico. U.S. farms and ranchers could face a serious labor shortage at a critical time for planting and harvesting crops essential to the domestic food supply. Additionally, AFBF noted supply chain concerns and market concerns. Duval noted concerns from livestock producers regarding market manipulation and urged USDA to monitor the situation to protect ranchers and consumers alike from price manipulation. In other news happening earlier this week, the ARC PLC sign-up for the 2019 program crop year has come and gone. Farm Service Agency Administrator Richard Fordyce says the number of farmers who signed up exceeded his expectations.
We have 105% enrollment in the 2019 ARC PLC sign-up. That was 1,742,000 contracts were initiated and signed by producers across the country.
Several weeks ago, Fordyce says they weren't even close to just reaching their sign-up expectations.
6 weeks ago, we had a long way to go, and we asked our state leadership across the country to develop a plan as to how we were going to get to March 16th. Our staff in those local county offices just did amazing work. They were very proactive and reaching out to farmers and setting up appointments and just working around their schedule to make sure that they were able to get them in.
He also appreciates the fact that so many farmers took the necessary time out of their busy schedules to complete the process. process.
We had amazing response from farmers that understand the importance of the ARC PLC safety net and wanted to be a part of that. I think it's a good story about teamwork between Farm Service Agency staff and farmers in those local communities getting it done.
Fordyce also says the rise in sign-up numbers might reflect farmers who didn't sign up in 2014 that noticed the effectiveness of the safety net programs.
ARC and PLC have really exhibited the desired effect of a safety net. And for producers that were not signed up under the 14 Farm Bill, I think they took advantage to sign up under this one.
Again, that was Richard Fordyce, the administrator of the Farm Service Agency. Moving along now into State of Illinois Ag News, trucks should be flowing more freely after a couple of moves by the federal and state government. That's according to Kirby Wagner, who serves as the Assistant Director of Transportation for the Illinois Farm Bureau.
Starting, I guess, really with the President's declaration, emergency declaration for the whole country, it kind of started a few things. So the FMCSA did relax hours of service rules, and those rules are relaxed specifically for emergency delivery. What does that mean specifically? Well, that relates to medical supplies and equipment, including gloves, masks, hand sanitizer, soap. They're allowing food for emergency restocking of stores, equipment, supplies for people that are necessary and are kind of in the quarantine phase, I should say, and working through that emergency or medical services sector. So it's a real specific exemption on the hours of service there, but that has been issued over the weekend. Governor Pritzker did sign a declaration allowing IDOT to issue permit for 10% overweight for trucks hauling emergency supplies for relief. And those emergency supplies, once again, fall into that medical and then emergency restocking of stores type situation. They are going to allow the overweight to be hauled and the permits to be issued in situations when they're normally not. So I think it's important to keep watching. I know that the concern about restocking stores with just that stuff, the equipment, the masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, soaps, disinfectants type thing, and on top of the emergency food. Something to keep watch on. We're hoping that the trucks kind of rally and get some of these extra deliveries made.
Again, that was Kirby Wagner, Assistant Director of Transportation for the Illinois Farm Bureau. And another state ag news, Illinois is set to receive a significant amount of rainfall over the next few days. DTN Chief Ag Meteorologist Bryce Anderson says it won't be just one event bringing all the rain. He predicts as many as three different weather systems will impact certain parts of the state over the next week.
Over the next 7 days from about Peoria south, we're going to see possibly 2 to 4 inches of rainfall. And you get into the southern quarter of the state, south of Carbondale, there could be even heavier amounts of rain than that. And this is going to be part of a wide area of the south central U.S. that's going to be very wet during the next week. And you know, soils are saturated. We know that. There's already some flooding, some river basin flooding in the Illinois River system and parts of the Mississippi Valley. This is going to enhance that. And it obviously means that we are not going to see an early start to the spring field work season for this year. I'm still holding out some optimism that we're not going to have the exact set of circumstances repeating themselves that we had a year ago, but it is going to be a slow start to spring.
Again, that was Bryce Anderson, the chief meteorologist with DTN. Moving on now to the Ag Community Bulletin Board, which is more of a non-event bulletin board. A few things in the ag world that are not going to be happening today. The Central Illinois Livestock Association meeting has been canceled. That was scheduled for tonight. Brant Consolidated's grower meeting for today has been canceled. And the Macoupin County Ag Education Foundation pork cookout for today is canceled, but they are looking to reschedule that for a later date. So again, the Central Illinois Livestock Association meeting for today, canceled. Brant Consolidated's grower meeting for today, canceled. And the Macoupin County Ag Education Foundation's pork cookout for today has also been canceled. And if you'd like to take a look at the full list of cancellations, you can find that on our website, wsmiradio.com/cancellations. And that will conclude this Thursday morning edition of the Farm Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us, those items can be sent to us at wsmi@wsmiradio.com. Or if you have a cancellation for us, those items can be sent to us at cancellations at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Thursday morning, March 19th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.